Thank you very much. I'm still trying to recover from the swine flu, so if I get like attacks of like coughing attacks, you have to excuse me. I'm just going to talk about my work in general and tell the story of N55 and show some examples of work, of course. But I was actually thinking about talking a little bit about the climate conference in Copenhagen, because there's this nice opportunity of doing that. Because one of the things that I find really interesting is that all the media, of course, I come from I'm based in Copenhagen, and there's going to be this climate conference, as you probably know. And one of the things that I find really interesting at the moment is that the media is sort of filled with climate stories, but nobody, and I mean nobody, addresses the real problem that we face. It's not the CO2 pollution. It's not the rising sea levels. The main problem is that we have a problem of overpopulation, that we are getting more and more people in the world, and that no technology, no smart technology, no political agreements as such will solve that problem. So I ask myself, why don't they address the real problem? Why don't they address the fact that we are too many people, that we don't have the resources, we don't have the food, and in a few years we really don't have the resources to feed all those people. And if everybody, like in India and China, wants to become middle class, as they probably want to, and start consuming as they do in Europe and the States, that's a real problem. And I think that the reason why nobody talks about overpopulation and trying to do something about that is that that would mean that the Western countries in the world, the main economies, would have to share resources, they would have to share economy, they would have to share knowledge with development countries in a way that we haven't done before. We've never tried that before. We would have to do it for real. And that would mean that this elite that are controlling the Western world would have to do away with their privileges. Because we all know that in the Western world, the experience is that when people reach a certain standards of living, the population stabilizes. So we know the best way to make sure that that the populations don't grow is to give people access to knowledge, resources, and economy. And at a certain level, like in Italy, like in Denmark, in many countries, the population will stop growing. So we don't want to talk about that. We don't want to do what we have to do, namely start sharing. Start sharing the resources, start sharing the knowledge, start sharing the economy. So why do we talk about this now? Because it's one of the major problems in the world, but also because N55 is about sharing knowledge, it's about sharing resources, it's about sharing economy. So. We all started to work together 15 years ago in Copenhagen. We met at the Royal Danish Academy of Fine Arts. We grew out of a situation that was dominated by like private galleries, like expressionist painting, artists that wanted to express themselves in a certain traditional way. And I personally have never been interested in promoting myself or becoming famous, but I've been really interested in sharing thoughts and becoming like clever or gaining knowledge on the way. And a few people started up this exhibition space at Nørre Farimagsgade 55, that's why it's called N55, that didn't have a name, and that started to do all kinds of collective experiments, trying to sort of reshape the whole idea about doing things in public. And I mean, we would do things like open up the doors and make anybody who wanted to exhibit something could just walk in and exhibit it and take something with them when they went, when they left again, and so forth. So we try to find an interesting way of doing exhibitions or doing things in public life, sort of. After a couple of years of experiments like that, six of us at the very beginning, decided that we wanted to make art become part of our everyday life for real. So we found its own business apartment in the center of Copenhagen, a huge one, but there was no bath, there was no real kitchen and so forth. So we decided to live there as a collective and let's sort of rebuild the city from within. And we started to work with objects like the bath, the kitchen, how could we produce food inside a city space, and so forth. And of course, we lived in a very traditional collective way with like a long row of beds, and everything was done together. We were working and living together like 24 hours a day, and so forth. And after a while, this is an example of work. This is like three modules. There's a bath module, obviously, and a supply module, and a compost toilet with biodegradable maize bags. So you shit in the bag, and you put a nut on it, and you compost it. We also started to invite other artists, architects, designers to come and work in relation to our situation in this space. So our everyday life, our personal life, became like a public life as well. And things started to develop between us and other people. And the more institutional sort of parts of art and architecture and so forth started to become interested, and we started to do exhibitions as well. So we were in this bizarre situation that we would copy the bath or copy the chair that I'm going to show you in a minute and exhibit those things and try to make meaningful situations using our everyday life objects in public situations instead. This is a collective version of the bath. We started to work together with a Danish electronic musician, and he would make soundtracks. So there would be a special soundtrack for this this piece. And there was a subwoofer inside, so it was really cozy. This is a hydroponic system that we did together with a Danish engineer who was developing originally systems like this for NASA in the early days. And it's basically a system to grow a large amount of food inside using artificial light and without using any kind of pesticides.
Jon, yeah? Can I ask you?
Nope, I'll just continue.
Your projects in some way I thought might be considered to be utopian, mm-hmm. in that they project something out there which can be seen as a critique of the way that we live our everyday lives. Mm. How would you respond? Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I don't like, as we talked about earlier, I don't like the term utopian, because for me that means sort of a vision about something that will never exist, or an ideal world or something. And what we do is to actually do things in the world, to make concrete situations and to try to make them meaningful. And at the same time, of course, be critical towards the way we normally solve problems or live or whatever, but in a positive way, because that's a long story, but I don't believe in ideological thinking. I don't believe in religious thinking. And I think we have proved that using ideologies or religious thinking as the basis of political decision is the most sort of suicidal thing to do. Like, we take Nazism or Stalinism, or if we take the Christian church, is probably the most destructive force that's ever been invented. Christianity has sort of been destroying so many cultures and so many lives, and been the reason for so many wars and so forth. So I think it's about time to find other ways of thinking and to take a starting point in everyday life, in everyday language, and to listen a little bit to some of the Danish physicist Niels Bohr's thoughts, and to try to translate that into understanding language on a very basic level is for me the most interesting way to go. So that's what we are trying to do. But I'll talk a little bit more about that later, maybe. So, but I really don't like the word utopian.
Can I ask a question?
Of course, yeah.
You mentioned Nazism, Stalinism. Obviously, the Nazi movement came about by the Eugenics. And at the start of your talk, you began talking about open population and yeah. How we don't talk about that as a cause of climate chaos.
But Nazism is a very bad solution to overpopulation.
Yeah. Which has the era government, which is implemented policy now.
Yeah.
For me, I think when you start to talk about overpopulation, you begin to look at who's overpopulated. And you mentioned India, China, Africa.
Yeah.
So that's already bordering.
That's a problem. I know that. Yeah.
Well, it's a big problem.
Yeah.
And, to look at overpopulation rather than looking at our overconsumption.
Yeah.
Because populations, families in those countries. Children who are dying at a young age, people who don't have the high life expectancy we have, they don't consume a fraction of what we consume.
No. Okay.
Our cattle, our beef burgers.
Could I just interrupt you for a second and say two things? First, I was talking about Danish media, and they really don't talk about overpopulation. I know there's forces in the world that actually talks about this, that addresses this problem. And the other problem is handing out condoms is not the solution, because that doesn't mean that we're going to share knowledge, that we're going to share resources, and we're going to share economies.
Isn't the sharing of knowledge two ways, though? That's quite patronizing to think that we've got to share knowledge with them.
I think handing out condoms is very patronizing. I think we should do things in a more intelligent and loving way. And the only way to make sure that we're not going to become too many, like even more people, is to share what we already got of resources. So I am really attacking our way of consumption. I say now it's time to share this. I mean, it's time to share the resources that we are using with the rest of the world, because that will solve the problem. If we share the economy with the rest of the world, if we share the resources and we start sharing the knowledge, we will solve the problem. Okay, so my sympathy is definitely not with the way that we live in the Western world. I mean, it's all one big joke, and I don't like the concentrations of power that are dominating this world. I mean, we all know that the 258 richest people in the world have got the same economical resources as the 1 billion poorest, and people still believe in the American dream because they might become one of those privileged people. And it's crap. I mean, how could people still believe in that? Why don't we start doing something about it? So I just mentioned this climate problem as one of the problems we're facing, where we are constantly looking at the wrong problem, because it's not about inventing new solar panels. That won't solve shit, okay? We all love that because it's such a smart, it's such a nice, it's such a clean technology, but it won't solve the problems. What solves the problems always, all the problems, no matter if we discuss town planning, architecture, whatever, is to look at the way that we build our society on a social level. Whether we are able to share things, whether we are able to give away old privileges, and look at things in a very different way. If you look at Denmark and land, ownership. It's still like a very, very large part of Denmark are owned by the aristocracy in something that we call democracy. To me, that simply doesn't make sense. And I know a little bit about Scotland, who's got a really big problem when it comes to land ownership. I mean, we have so many problems. We really have to develop democracy. And in that process, we could solve smaller problems like the climate problem. But start acting differently, start thinking in a different way. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm not very good at it. I'm just like a normal person. But all my works are concerned about sharing because of the manuals we produce. We try to give away the information that we have gained when we do a project. But it's also about trying to find other ways of living that points out new social ways of living. Now, I've done my term in collective living. I've done it for a lot of years, and I really enjoy living with my girlfriend and my son alone now. So I think I've done my part in that. I might return to it, but it's been like a really interesting experience, and I've been learning so much from that process. And I wish that more people would sort of fuck up their normal ideas of their social life and start, you know, having sex with everybody, like all kinds of sexes, live in different ways. Don't have like one place to live, but live in different places. Just try to find new ways of doing things. Yeah?
You sound like a nice chap.
Like what?
You sound like a nice chap.
Thank you. That's one of the nicest things I've heard for a long time. Thank you. That's the greatest honor. Thank you very much. Thank you. No. No. No, they won't.
No. By accident.
No.
They might be admitted. It'll just happen. Hey, you said you got bird flu. What about the mix of bird flu and pig flu at the same time? Who did it? Oh, it was just started in Mexico or something, didn't it? Anyway, who knows? It was a door-to-door saleswoman. Perfect. How can you spread it differently? Evolution. You talk about high population, sort of high families. It takes millions of years.
Oh, they do that in the Western. If you look at the birth rate in the Western world, that's exactly what happens.
Okay, in the Western world, but the Western world took.
No. This is for children. I mean, you've learned in school, and I think that's right. That in societies that have got a lot of insecurity, people will have to produce a lot of children in order for them to take care of them when they grow old.
They don't have to,
they do that, okay? So, if they don't have to care so much about that, they don't produce so many children. No, it took like, in Denmark it took like 30 years. I mean, that's how it works. Anyway, but I think that to choose to be naive in the right situations is very important, because if we want to change the world, and we start by saying you can't change the world, the risk that we change anything is very, very small. So, okay, I'll continue a little bit. This is IcoAir, and this is an example of producing food inside an average apartment in Copenhagen. This is a chair called dynamic chair. We needed chairs, so we built chairs. And we've been using those systems that we built to create public situations also outside the apartment. After a while, we decided that we wanted to try to produce our own sort of standalone system in public space. And we looked at Buckminster Fuller and found a system that we wanted to work with. And we changed that into what we call the N55 space frame. The idea was to to be able to build a house that would last for 500 years, use as little resources as possible, and cost the same as Volkswagen in Denmark. So we made this house, called the N55 Space Frame. It's made from acid-resistant stainless steel, and the theoretical durability of this material is 500 years in the atmosphere. So you don't need to maintain it at all, apart from the windows, maybe. The weight of the house is 1.5 tons, so we had to weigh it down by adding tanks with water to weigh it down to the ground in order for it not to blow away. Part of the interior. But we only bought the land where we built the house, so we decided that we wanted to build some land ourselves. We developed this thing called the floating platform, and we rented a normal boat space in the center of Copenhagen without telling anybody that the boat was looking a little bit different. In order to create stability, normally you would have like a really heavy thing shaped like a hull in order to create stability. But we decided that we wanted to make a really lightweight thing that was very stable. So we made a lot of cells that transform the wave energy into turbulence between the cells. We gave it like a hull shape, and we put the buoyancy in each corner and ended up with a very, very stable, very, very cheap, very, very durable thing that we could put on water and build our house. This is like 10 years ago, and the house is still there. I lived there for 3.5 years. We were 3 people living there, and the price was like 500 kroner every month. That's about £50 each for a very nice place to stay in the center of Copenhagen with very little work on maintenance. The boat you see in the front is solar powered, and it's made from the same system as the house. It's heated up, it's very well insulated, but it's heated up with a wood stove, which is okay because it's CO2 neutral. And we also, when we built this, we started to work in this area with the sort of social surroundings. So we were building like a place to barbecue, and we ordered 25 tons of sand and made a beach without asking anybody. And the beach is still there as well. And people are using it on a daily basis. And we started to do all kinds of social things in this local area. And at the same time, we were doing exhibitions and so forth. This is another way of using the house system. Instead of building it using the octet truss, as it's called, we used the way that carbon or atoms are placed in diamonds to make this system that are like a house without a roof with all the basic functions. There's like a bath, there's sound, there's light, there's cooking facilities, toilets, and so forth, roll-out beds. And this has been traveling around the world in all kind of different locations. This is a suspended version of the house. Water collector, hammocks with the roof. This is another living system. It's inspired by a stay at among Inuit people in Greenland. In the old days, in the northern part of Canada, Inuit people in the winter time, they would meet up, different family groups, and they would, if they wanted to live together, they would build this temporary community with igloos, with tunnels below the snow, and they would live there for maybe 3 months. They would split up again, and next winter they would find somebody else and form like temporary communities. So we tried to introduce this system that would enable you to live in Western cities in the same way. The container contains vacuum cleaner, toilets, kitchen, all the facilities you need in your practical everyday life. It's very easy to park as well. And it floats. There's a, with the system is a supply module that supplies, so every time we've been showing this in public space in relation to an institution, we've been giving out free internet and water and electricity as well. This is another system called Small Truck. It's a very dangerous situation in Copenhagen. And the purpose with this was to create a sort of a Lego system where you could create small economies. By this version, it's like a fold-out restaurant. So you could fold out like chairs and stuff, and you could cook for people, and you could actually live in this as well. If you're courageous. But the idea was to be able to live from a bicycle like this. It's actually made, most of it is made from recycled bicycle parts and things from wheelbarrows and stuff. But the idea was that one day you could be like a restaurant owner, and the next day you could have a bookshop, and you could even be like a city farmer like this. So you could sell eggs or like own things that you produce yourself. This is another system called micro-dwellings, a very cheap way of constructing dwellings. The idea was one function, one room, plating structures, welded steel plates, very cheap way, like building boats or ships. And we wanted to make a system that would enable you both to live on land, on water and submerged. So at the moment this system is at the bottom of Copenhagen Harbor. This is my son looking out the window. I tried to make some pictures with me swimming outside. So and the water was really cold and my girlfriend were taking some pictures and I just kept jumping in trying to dive down without any weight. And so we had like loads of pictures showing my dick on the way up. So I would have loved to show you a picture with me outside, but it didn't succeed. yeah, I talked a little bit about, now it's getting really boring, I'm sorry, but I'll be boring for like 10 minutes or something. I talked about Niels Bohr, the Danish physicist, before. In the early days at the academy, I tumbled over this Danish philosopher who is called, he's now dead, who's called Peter Singernagel. And he was a very strange man. He spent his whole life trying to solve a problem that Descartes formulated. And it's basically, is there a world beyond the human consciousness. Peter Singernagel. There's an English parallel called Strawson. It's a little bit related. Peter Singernagel based his work on, he actually solved this problem of the surrounding world, this problem solved by, formulated by Descartes. That's been sort of one of the major problems of Western philosophy and one of the reasons why science and philosophy split up. And I think that's a catastrophe, actually. But he based his work on something Niels Bohr said. He said, the Danish physicist, I hope you know him, he's famous for being one of the guys who developed the nuclear bomb, but he also did some really interesting work. He said science is about formulating the right postulates. So if we make the wrong postulates about a phenomenon like gravity, it doesn't work. We won't be able to send rockets to the moon if we say that gravity is something else than it actually is. So whenever we use language in the right way, when we talk about reality, things work. So, and the main sort of thing Singanail did was to point out that we all know that there are some rules in formal logic that we are not supposed to contradict ourselves. Aristotle, you know that. We are not supposed to contradict ourselves when we talk rationally together. But Singanail pointed out that there's some other rules for talking rationally together. There's something called logical relations. So if we talk about persons, we have to talk about persons as if they have bodies, because we can't imagine persons without bodies. We could imagine dead persons. But dead persons are characterized by being somebody who once had a body. So, I mean, there's a logical relation between person and body. And now I'm going to make this story very short. What he points out, and that's why where he's a parallel to Strawson, is that there's a logical relation between persons and persons' rights. That persons' rights, we don't know exactly what those rights are, but persons' rights are not something that we agree upon in the Geneva Convention. Whenever we talk about persons, we have to talk in a meaningful way or in a rational way. We have to talk about persons as if they have rights, because otherwise things stop making sense. And you can prove that in a logical way. So that leads to the fact that this society is dominated by concentrations of power. And concentrations of power don't tend to respect persons' rights. So this leads to the fact that we should try to find ways of living with as small concentration of power as possible. So that's an example of a way of thinking about what to do without becoming ideological or basing your decisions on religious thinking. And what we did was to talk about art or aesthetic practice in a way that's meaningful and a way that you can't deny in a meaningful way. So if anybody should be interested, it's on the internet and you could read it afterwards. I'll try to be less boring from now on. It's just a short introduction. This is another family of projects. This project is called Land. And what we did was to use formal ownership against formal ownership. So we made this place on the internet where people who had the formal ownership to land could guarantee other people that they could do whatever they wanted to on this land. So a lot of small places has been set free in the world. I think it's about 18 places in the world, from San Diego to the very northern part of Norway. And the places have been used for all kinds of different events and people. There's even been places where people have been built houses. This is in Chicago. I think that was very courageous. It's like a typical sort of suburb, middle-class suburb. And they decided to give their front garden to the land project. This is in Denmark, northern part of Norway. This is another project called Rooms. It's based on the same way of thinking. Why don't you sort of interfere a little bit? I'm getting so bored when I do. Okay, you can do it in a little while. I'll speak a little bit more. Okay, but Rooms works in the same way as Land, but it's about rooms, of course. So people who is not using a room in a certain part of the day could allow other people to use the room. This is a barber shop called Shop, and it's both like a way of exchanging things without money, but it's also access to all kinds of facilities. This was like 500 square meters. It was in Glasgow, but it's been showed on several occasions. It's built from recycled catering boxes from planes, got a really good deal, and pallets from the food industry. But there was also like kindergartens, wood workshops, places where you could make clothes, library, all kinds of, there was also a restaurant where you could just go and cook your own food. This is, I don't know why I brought this picture, but it's like just a kit for doing demonstrations that I'm a bit embarrassed about because I'm really a non-violent guy, but this sign is like, you know, the police uses like polycarbonate shields. So I thought I would make this shield that's like a sign and you could pull out the steel and you could use but it's really, it's not my, I mean, I do usually don't do things like that. So I would, of course, never use it, but I have friends that really love this project. Anyway, such a stupid thing. Yeah. Okay, and this is another project that I, yeah, it's a rocket, and I think if I've shown the work in this way in London at this time, where I showed this work in Copenhagen, I would have been stopped. But nobody stopped me. The only guy that talked to me was that this is my local area. It's called Christianshavn. It's this sort of Amsterdam part of Copenhagen with channels and so forth. And I stopped at the main square with the rocket, looking around, pointing at this the richest guy in Denmark's sort of main office. And the only one that talked to me was this guy who presented himself as a Palestinian guy, and he said, "I know how that works." But it's about sharing technology. It's about giving people access to technology, and it's a very simple system that's very efficient. And we produced it to spread information from high altitude. In this case, it was super weeds that actually a guy that works here, I think Heath Bondi, smuggled in from the States to me. It was about genetically modified stuff. So it's the payload here is super weeds, but it's able to fly, go like 50 kilometers in less than a minute, and the fuel is laughing gas that most people would have access to easily, and polyethylene, the same materials as in plastic bags. So
now my interruptions are more predictable.
Yeah.
But one of the questions I was going to ask earlier was about how much you intend your projects to influence the way in which other people act. Would you want your projects to be rolled out and ultimately repeated and used by other people? This question becomes quite different in the context of the piece that you're showing here.
Yeah, I want Buckminster Fuller again. He was sort of one of the victims of the depression in the 20s in the States. His father-in-law was a famous New York architect, and he went broke, and Fuller got really depressed because now he had to make his own living, and that's a good reason for becoming depressed. And then after a couple of years, he decided that he wanted to use what he called his average intelligence for the benefit of the world. And all he wanted, it's not completely quoted in a completely right way, but it's something like this. He said the only thing he wanted in return was he wanted to have fun while doing it. And that's very important. So when I do things, I do it because I think it's meaningful for myself. And the idea is that if it's meaningful for me, it might be meaningful to somebody else. And I wanted to interfere with our thinking of how we think about ownership to land. Just because this stupid asshole, John Locke, got this idea that it was like a God-given right to own land, we should start thinking about whether this was the most intelligent way to give access to land. It might not be that. And there's like a lot of traditional societies and places in the world where land ownership is not accepted. It's still like in Greenland, you still have to apply to the municipality to be able to build a house, and then you could lend the land or rent the land for a while. But you can't own land. It's such an important thing in relation to how we think about society that you could deny other people access to walking on the land. It's so fucking stupid. And it's so such a dominant thing in how we interact socially. So I would like to people to start thinking about their habits, habitual conceptions, and maybe to think for themselves and start acting in a different way, and maybe doing things that would make them happy, maybe, like building building their own nest, try to build their own house and living in it, and take all the regulations away, because okay, in Denmark there's 5 million people, and if like half of them build a house in their lifetime, let's say 2,000 burn down and they die in the most terrible way, but they will still be happy. I mean, and that would be such a beautiful thing. If more people could become happy, get like really basic experiences thing, and things could become a little bit more dangerous, just a little bit more dangerous, would be great. Okay.
So would you like people to actually build their own houses using the systems that you have?
I would like people to start thinking from themselves and start to evaluate sort of a lot of norms in society about sexuality, about economy, about knowledge, about everything. I would like people to think all over again. But I would hate them to copy my rocket, because that would be really dangerous. And I would hate them to copy the house directly, because it would be really ugly. And I would love them to do something for themselves. Could I continue?
We'll see.
This is a great offer from N55 to large companies and states to redesign their symbols into something that people could be really proud of. And this is like the Union Jack saying no borders. It's a very simple process. We take the flag and we use one of the basic filters in Photoshop and we write something on it, and that's it. But I think there's much more reason to be proud about a no borders flag than to be a nationalist. This is Newcastle. I really like this picture. There's something powerful about it. This is a project that I've been trying to realize for many years now in Cardiff, and I hope that it finally will become reality. It's a very cheap way of constructing large floating structures that would enable us to colonize shallow waters as well as land areas. But and the idea is to make both structures that you could live in, but also floating gardens and floating fish farms and ways of producing different things that we need. You know, when you do like visualizations like this, you always cheat. This is like a coral reef fish, and they don't have fish like that in Cardiff, but it looks better. And the same goes for the parrots. There's no parrots in Cardiff, but I think they look so much better. But it's cheating. This is the last project I'm going to show, I think. I did this last year. It's called Walking House, and it was a commission in Wising, at Wising Arts Center, and I was supposed to work together with the local Romani people, because there's a long tradition of Romani people living around the area of Cambridge, and I had a couple of meetings with the local Romani people, and they didn't travel around anymore. They lived in sort of campers and stuff, and they had like huge fences. The guys definitely took a lot of hormones because they were really wide and not very tall, and the children looked as if they got no food and got a lot of beating, and they had really terrible dogs, and I couldn't find a way of working directly in this social situation, because it's such a brutalized culture, and I mean it was impossible. So I started to look like historically on the nomadic living in England, and I visited some museums, and I studied traditional Romani carriages, and I was really excited by it because it's really refined, beautiful technology when it comes to insulation and to using the space and to living in like harmony with your sort of natural surroundings, not necessarily with other people, because that's always been a problem. I think it's Bruce Chatwin that points out this really beautiful relationship between the settlers and the nomadic people, because the settlers produces hydrocarbonates, and the nomadic people traditionally is very good at producing proteins, so they have this relationship. Anyway, so I ended up suggesting an up-to-date new way of building a carriage that's powered by the sun. This thing is 3.5 meters high and 4.5 meters long, and it walks, actually with the chimney it's like 4 meters, and it walks 60 meters per hour. So it's very slow, but it's still really big. And inside there's all the functions you need to live. This is the living room, and on top of that is the bed. This is the kitchen and a toilet that you could sort of fold out and use. In one of the corners there's the computer that controls the legs. This is the wood stove. Yeah, and we were of course inspired by Archigram and their suggestions from the 70s to make a walking city, but we wanted to find a way of doing it, actually doing it. So it's modular, so you could build them together and make them form like walking collectives or walking villages or even walking cities.
What would happen if people wanted to walk in different directions at the same time?
They would split up. this is a suggestion for the next European capital in Essen, in Germany. It's like a, what do you call it, a communal house, like a place where everybody have access to doing all kinds of public events, blah, 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 blah. There's a whole program to this, how to use it and what kind of functions is inside the house. So I'm just going to show the structure. It's a newly developed aluminium structure that's really low cost we've done. This is, we were asked by the Guggenheim Museum, this is just to show the relation to art institutions. This was, we were asked by Guggenheim to come up with a vision of, our dream vision of Guggenheim. And we developed this kit that would enable the public, the visitors, to break down Guggenheim in a very slow and very beautiful way that reminds you of the way that the Maya cities are taken over by the jungle. So there's a small hammer and some seeds, and we are making sure that the whole system is sort of sprayed with water all the time. So slowly the Guggenheim will sort of disintegrate, disappear. And that's what I want to happen with art and architecture and all kinds of different sort of specialized ways of working. Because I think that the most beautiful thing that could happen was if art could be an integrated part of everyday life, something that was that people in their everyday life thought that aesthetical practice in whatever they did was important, that they should, I mean, treat people in a beautiful way and do the right thing and make beautiful houses and make beautiful plates and sing beautiful songs, but do it for themselves. Do it together with other people. Instead of stupid situations like this, where I am one person speaking to all these people. I like conversations much better. Okay, so.
Do you feel that possibly if everyone doing things for themselves,
oh, just.
It means that there's no overview of how the world is using its resources. because they're trying to focus on what they're doing?
I think it's about education. And I think it's about, and it's already happening. It's already happening with music and literature, that people are producing themselves and are sharing in a different way, like electronic music. This stupid computer is born with a program that makes, enables you to make the most fantastic electronic music and share it with other people. So it's already happening. It's going to happen with the basic designs, like 3D things, 3D printers, stuff like that. So it's already happening. And I think some of the last artists in the world, like me, should do our best to enable the process to happen and to do our best to come up with some good suggestions of how things could be. I'm just going to change to the last picture because it sort of shows my my approach to life in the most sort of the best way.
So I should ask then, have you finished?
Yeah, I'm finished. Thank you. Sorry.
Thank you.